Some people at UC Irvine and the Boomerang collaboration. So I have to say that the leader of that work was Marcella Benigiani. She was a grad student in Paris and Rome, and she's now a postdoc in Rome. So here's the list of the Boomerang collaboration. It was a bit too big to put in on the first slide. So first of all, obviously, we'll concentrate on the thermal AZ, not kinetic AZ, so I might refer the AZ effect as just a thermal AZ. So the reason why we were interested in using Boomerang to try to measure the AZ signal is because Boomerang is one of the few experiments to have observation in a free frequency, which span an area where you have a decrease in temperature at 150 around the null frequency of the AZ effect, and at higher frequency, 350, where you have an increase in temperature. So I just decided to put this little slide here to record a little bit where we are right now. So first of all, there's already several cluster detection on a very small scale. So here I just show the SMSD detection and the apex detection of the bullet cluster. Of course, now there's even better with the South Pole measurement of the bullet cluster and of other cluster. But I'm going to talk mainly on the power spectrum estimation with Boomerang data. So on very small scale, a few years ago, there was a bit of controversy with the measurement of CBI and AGBAR on what the level of the fluctuation should be at an angular scale of a few arc minutes. And since then, the data have been a bit reviewed. And this controversy tend to be a bit reduced. Here on this power spectrum plot, you can see AGBAR data, CBI, and BIMA, and the SDA upper limit. All these measurements have been rescaled to the same frequency. I put it in the RJ limit, so very low frequency. And you can see that basically they are compatible at 1 plus sigma, maybe 1.5 sigma. I didn't put yet the quad result because I think they are working out a very precise measurement on their limits of the six signal. But basically, from what we published already, I can say that basically they are about the same level of as SDA, and they should put some limit around the 100 micro k square at 1 sigma. So, and we heard this week that another additional problem to the SD measurement at very small scale and large scale is, in fact, the modelization of the SD power spectrum. So here, in fact, you have two models of SD power spectrum. One is Komatsu and Seljak power spectrum for sigma 8 equal 1. And this is a power spectrum I compute from Martin White simulation, the same as someone mentioned before. And that's also for sigma 8 equal 1. And you can see there's still a difference of maybe a factor 1.5 or something, maybe 2.5 or something in the amplitude. So the idea here was to try to use Boomerang data to put some constraint on the large scale amplitude of the power spectrum. So Boomerang was the Balloon-born experiment, and it was launched in 2003, beginning of 2003. It's observed for about 16 days. All right. No, 15 days. And during these 15 days, it acquired 300 hours of data. And they were spent on three fields. One field was located around the galactic plane, 30 hours were spent on that. And otherwise, 200 hours were spent on the extragalactic field. And one field was big and observed shallowly, and one field was measured with a quite high signal-to-noise. So here are the map of this That's basically the integration in seconds of each of these fields, the shallow survey field, and the deep survey field. So in this analysis, we concentrate only on the deep survey field, because more than half of the data were taken on that field. And also because it simplifies a little bit of analysis, we don't have to deal with different field size. So Boomerang did not have as many detectors as NOR, ACT, and SPT. There were a total of 16 bolometer. Here you can see the picture of the focal plane. They were polarized sensitive bolometers, but we did not use any of this capability in this analysis. 8 bolometer at 145, 4 at 245, and 4 at 345. From that, we decided to remove a few number of detectors. First, we remove two detectors which were previously known to have a high noise, the 245X and the 345Z. And then, looking again into this detector sensitivity, we decided to remove one detector at 145, which noise was about 2 times greater than the other one, and also to remove the 345Y, which noise was also quite high. So finally, our data set was 7 bolometers at 145, 3 bolometers at 245, and only two bolometers at 345 gigahertz. So here is some characteristic of this experiment. The beam size was about 10 arc minutes, which means that we are limited to go up to about L of 1200, which is about like 6 arc minutes scale. Here you have the sensitivity of each frequency band. So as you can see, Boomerang was much more sensitive at 145 and at 245 and 345. And you will see that this is a kind of a limitation for this type of analysis. The calibration error, absolute calibration error of each of these channels were 2, 8, and 13% at 145, 245, and 345. And that will be a decent amount of, that will play quite a bit of, that will be a quite, that will add quite a bit of amplitude in terms of our budget. So here are the Boomerang map. So at 145, 245, and 345 gigahertz, there is three unidentified radio sources here, here, and here in that field. So we mask this, this radio source. Otherwise, you can see also some CMB structure, like this big structure in the middle here. And there's also some dust structure that you can mainly see at 345. For instance, here, it's hard to identify it on this map because this map are heavily filtered. So, but you will see later, I will show some template of this dust emission, and you will see that blue-red-blue alternance is visible in the simulation. Sorry? Oh, it's a red is hot and blue is... Oh, the range. Oh, sorry. Unfortunately, I remember the range. But I suppose it's around the 100 micro-K. I don't have a more precise value. Sorry. So our first step was to try to isolate the SD signal, given we have a free frequency band. So for that, we decided to use a quite simple technique, which is to do an internal linear combination in the spherical harmonic space. So what you do is that basically you take your set of ALM at different frequency, and you add a weight, and you combine them, and you get some ALM, which should be more representative to your emission. So that was previously done in WMAP data and other data sets to try to remove the foreground emission from the CMB emission. And here we will use the same type of technique, but this time the CMB will be one of the foregrounds. So when I will talk about foreground, I will also include everything except the SD signal. So if you do that, and then you decide you want to minimize the variance of this quantity, ALM, which is basically the variance of this quantity is just the power spectrum. Then you can define what will be the optimal weight to minimize this variance. And this is equal to this matrix C, which is the correlation matrix between frequency I and frequency j, multiplied by this vector E, which is equal to, is a vector equal to 1. Doing so, computing this way, now you can compute what is a SZ power spectrum by multiplying this correlation matrix by the weight. So these techniques work well, but the thing is that doing so, you minimize the total variance of your ALM. You minimize the signal variance and the noise variance. So we decide to use a little bit more aggressive technique. In that sense, that instead of minimizing the power spectrum, we decide to minimize the sum of the cross spectrum. So instead of defining our correlation matrix as the sum of all the ALM, we decide to separate each detector and to only sum over different pairs of detector. So in this formula, you have the SZ frequency spectrum, S nu, which allow to rescale each ALM with the SZ spectrum in order to only keep the SZ emission. Then you need to correct from your beam function of your frequency I. And then you have two indices, one for the frequency and one for the detector. So what we did is basically, when you compute the diagonal element of this matrix, so the correlation between frequency 150 and 150, instead of using the sum of the detector ALM and just computing the element of that matrix, you just use the ALM of each of the detector, and you do the sum on the cross correlation pairs. That means that basically for 145, where we have 7 detectors, we only have 21 independent pairs. And for the 245, we only have 3 independent pairs out of these 3 detectors. So to rescale the global analysis roadmap, so we use a Boomerang data set. We get it through the Boomerang pipeline, which main characteristic is to use a high pass filter at 0.2 Hertz. So this is quite aggressive. We try to remove as much as systematic effect as possible. Then we process the time order data with map making. For each of the detector, we got some maps. And from each of these maps, we compute the ALM. From this set of ALM, we fill our correlation matrix. And from this correlation matrix, we compute our optimal weight and the SZ spectrum. So that's what we obtain on the data. Sorry, I forgot to say that also we did that for free bin in L space. So we made a first bin between 250 and 450 in L range, and one between 450 and 700, and one between 700 and 1200. So basically, that's the result we obtain for our raw spectrum, which are basically between 160 to 500 micro k square in LL plus 1 CL over 2 pi. But before to claim that this is AZ, one first thing that you could do here, you have the weight that we compute. You can divide this weight by, the sum of this weight will be equal to 1 in order to keep all your AZ signal. But what you can do also is that you divide this weight by the SZ spectrum. And basically, that means that you have this weight in the CMB temperature units. And in the CMB temperature units, this weight would need to be equal to 0 if you were to remove all the CMB, basically. And as you can see here, they are not really equal to 0. They are smaller than 1, but greater than 0. So that means that we did not remove all the CMB, and this might be also over residual. So besides, we don't have error bar. So what we need to do is use some simulation to estimate our residual and also to estimate the error bar on this measurement. So on this simulation, we include CMB and noise. So we create 200 random simulation, Gaussian simulation of CMB, And we use the boomerang noise realization, which includes some correlation between the detectors. For the galactic dust, we use the model 8 of Finkenbeiner et al. 99. And for the radio processes and the far infrared background, we use a Planck sky model. So we use one set of simulation where we just basically use the prediction from this model. We don't make any modification of that. And basically, if you were to describe the amplitude of this component with one coefficient, they're all equal to 1. Before to proceed, what we did is that we also tried to evaluate what the amplitude of all, each of these components in the boomerang data. So what we found here first, so we just modeled the spectrum of the data with some average spectrum of CMB, average spectrum of dust, and radio sources and far infrared background. So for the CMB, we found that basically the data agree with a CMB factor of 1, which means that the calibration was good at 4% level in the boomerang data. For the dust, we found quite a high value of 4.6, plus or minus 0.8. And it seems quite high, according to Marchera, there is some evidence that there might be some cold dust component in this field, which produce a higher value for the dust. It could also be due to some atmospheric signal residual there, because atmosphere, the spectrum of the atmosphere is also increasing with frequency. And also, the spatial structure of the atmosphere will also be a Kolmogorov sky of a spectrum, like N-3. So it could also be due to that.
Does it mean that the dust spectrum, the power spectrum of dust is 5 times?
Yeah, so it's in temperature, it's a factor of 2, basically, 2 point something.
Twice the Finkenbeiner model?
Yeah, at 350. Well, this was done on all frequency, but the main constraint comes from the 350 gigahertz channel. We try to measure the far infrared background. The problem is that far infrared background emission is greater at very small scale, and it's also greater at higher frequency. And at 350 gigahertz, our signal to noise is very poor, so we don't have very strong constraint on the far infrared amplitude. The only constraint is that it should be smaller than 0.7 at 1 sigma. Here you have the likelihood distribution, and factor 1 would be really possible. On the radio point sources side, we found a correlation factor of 0.8 and compared to the Planck sky model. And this value was also found by, not exactly this value, but a similar value was found by Quad. In their last paper, they found that the DSOT model was over-predicting the amount of radio point sources signal by a factor, they found 0.6 to 0.7 times the DSOT model. So it seems to me that this model is a bit over-predicting the radio point sources.
So here you are hitting the power spectrum.
Yeah, the power spectrum.
But the dust could not be fitting the map.
Yeah, the dust could be fitted in the map, that's true.
We try. I mean, this, the results should be consistent, right? I mean, if you are
fine. If you have the same, well, it depends. It should be consistent if you think that they come from the same emission, from the same sources. If you have a different type of dust, which produces a different emission, then the correlation should not be perfect. Or if it comes from atmosphere.
You're using the same template.
Yeah. Sorry?
You're using the same template. You're using the power spectrum measured from FBS as a template to fit for dust. Right.
Yeah. So
what I'm saying is,
yeah,
use FBS now.
Well, for that, I think the value found was a bit smaller. It was maybe around 2 or 1.7 or something like that.
That's consistent.
But this thing also varies with frequency, I have to say. At 145, the value is smaller. It's like maybe a factor of 3 or something. So, but there is also very large uncertainty. At 145, uncertainty is like order, I think, almost 1. So at 145, it could be compatible with our Finkenbeiner signal.
You're using the SFT within the area that you're observing, right? Or everything?
Yeah, that was done within the observer we're observing, not outside. So to take into account this value, and to take into account the fact that we are not really sure about the amplitude of all this response, we decide to add two more sets of simulation. One where we use the largest amplitude of a signal, and one where we use the smallest amplitude. Basically, that just means that in one case we don't put any far-infrared background, but we basically in this case, and one where we just put a upper limit on the far-infrared background. So the next step is just to put the simulation into the pipeline and to proceed the same way as we did for the data. So we did that for each channel, we did that 200 times for each data set. And for each data set, we can compute some weight and we can compute some AZ spectrum. So here I will show you what's the effect of the pipeline on the simulation. So here is a dust estimate at 345 GHz. And here you can see some structure which look like the one that you can see at the 345 GHz on the data. Here you can see that the level of dust is very inhomogeneous in this map. You have a very strong level there, like you can see here. But here the level is much smaller. So here is a map of the far infrared background. I cannot tell you that much about it because I'm not really sure exactly what's being put inside this simulation. But most of the fluctuations are on small scale, so the effect of the pipeline is not that striking, except that since the scan were along that direction, most of the structure along that direction, the large structure on that direction, are featured and give the impression that there's some kind of perfect orientation along the vertical axis. That's the radio consensus map. So typical to filtering, you can see there's this rippling effect for each of the sources. There's this positive source and there's a negative dip around each sources along the scan direction. So most of all the simulations we use were AZ-free, but we need some AZ simulation in case we detect some AZ signal to compute a filtering function, because since we use a 0.2 hertz filter in time domain, that means that we eliminate quite a substantial amount of AZ. So for that, we use a multi-modal simulation that you can find on this website. And in fact, you can find 10 sets of simulation. Each of the fields is 100 square degrees. We proceed through the pipeline, so that's the raw simulation. And once you process them with the pipeline, you can see that you have the same effect as on the radio point sources. You have since the source is negative, here you have a positive bump on each side along the scan direction. And then we compute the power spectrum. So first of all, here is the power spectrum of this. That's on the raw data, on the raw simulation. That's the power spectrum of this 10 simulation. And here in blue, you can see that will be the cosmic variance for Gaussian emission on the field of that size, basically. And the black error bar here represents what is the real variance that we can measure on this power spectrum on this simulation. And this variance is, as you can see, much greater than the Gaussian cosmic variance. It's about 2 to 6 times larger. So we measure the power spectrum on the simulation before to input them into the pipeline, and we measure the spectrum after we process them from the pipeline. And if you divide the two spectrum, we can measure our filtering function. And since we have 10 simulations, we can also measure some error bar on this filtering function. And so that's what you get here. Each point is separated by delta L of 100. And in color A, you have the band that we use to measure the AZ spectrum. So as you can see, this is a very sharp filtering function, and it's around at like 200, L equal 200. That was expected because the scanning speed is about 0.5 degrees per second, which corresponds roughly to 0.5. Yeah, it's 0.5. So 0.5. So that means 0.2. I think it's 0.2.
So 0.2 degree per second. So that means basically that filtering is happen on degree scale. This is the average value of the filtering function on each of these helmin. So the main error is in the first bin, where we have like 20% uncertainty on the value of this filtering function, because the amplitude of the signal is not very well known, and we filter so many modes in this area that basically we are left with 20% uncertainty in this.
What is plotted in the left panel?
Yeah. What is plotted where?
What is plotted in the left panel? The thermal asset power spectrum?
Yeah.
Is there beam in there? Different. Is there beam taken into account there? What's throwing off the power of all 1,000?
Oh, you're right. I must have made a mistake.
Because there's a beam on the left and on the
Yeah, right. I don't know. I'm not sure. I must have. Yeah, I think it's a beam.
So on the left. I think the transfer function doesn't have a beam, it seems like.
Well, because both are beam.
No, because the one on the left.
No, this is okay. This is the bin. This is the SD at 145 gigahertz that we would observe if we don't have any filtering, any pipeline action.
Uh-huh.
So, like this thing here, so you can see that this is the posting of that map. And that map, you can see that the size of this bump are over 10 arc minutes, which is the size of our bin. So, yeah, it's beam smooth.
Okay.
This is beam smooth, and this is the power spectrum of this beam smooth.
Great.
Sorry about that. So this is beam smooth, and obviously the processed data in the pipeline also beam smooth, and that's what we obtain at the end when we compare the two. Okay. So now what we can do is that we can compare the data points and the simulation. So one quantity that we can compare is the amplitude of this correlation matrix. So we have this correlation matrix, which is 3 by 3, the dimension is 3 by 3, but it's a symmetric matrix, so it's only 6 independent elements. And we have this correlation matrix for 3 different L bin range, one between 250, 450, 450, 700, 700, 1200. Here in blue, you have the value of the data, and in black, with the error bar, you have the simulation and a 1 sigma error bar. So if you look at this from large, I mean, the points are quite small, but you can see that there's some kind of global agreement there. And if you look into more detail at some point, on this 150-150 correlation at very large angular scale, you can see that the agreement is pretty good. It's not so surprising because mainly here it's CMB and dust. If you look another point here, you see that the agreement is not as good. We are shifted a bit, the data a bit on the left, so there's less power. This two-pack structure here, because here I put the three set of simulation. So you have kind of distribution depending on which set of simulation you're using. And here another point, which this time is shifted to the right. So what we would, of course, we don't expect a perfect agreement between the data and simulation, because if there's SD signal in the data and there's none in the simulation, we should have a constant shift of this correlation matrix. The thing is that this shift would be very, very small. Honestly, is order like for this thing here, it should be order 10 minus 3, so it's very small amount. So from this set of correlation matrix, we can compute the average weight, and we can compute also what is the value of the SD spectrum. And what we obtain is this value here. That's the average SD spectrum we obtain on SD-free simulation. We obtain value around 200 to 300 micro k square. It's also in LF1/2π.
It's again in Rayleigh jeans.
In Rayleigh jeans frequency. So it's not completely surprising, since we give 5 different types of sources, and we only have 3 frequencies. So basically, the algorithm cannot remove everything. So there must be some, the algorithm needs to find a trade-off between the different sources. Here, you have the different residual separated by component. So for that, we reuse the same weights. And instead of using the full correlation matrix, we use a correlation matrix for each of these components. So the CMU is reused to quite a decent level, but there's a lot of far potential, a lot of far infrared background. Of course, this will depend on how much far infrared background we have on our map. There's also quite a bit of dust, especially at contra-intuitively at large angular scale. And this is because if you look at the wave we're using to compute this value, there is really little use of the 345 gigahertz channel. And basically, when you use the 145 and 245, you will remove the CME. And the 345 is a kind of the extra channel to remove the dust, the active dust. But since here was not much use, there's a big residual. We also compute the error coming from each of from different sources. We compute the instrumental error, which are around 100 to 300 micro k square. We add from that the variance coming from our lack of knowledge of the amplitude of the foreground. We include also the beam size uncertainty, the calibration error. So the calibration error is quite huge at low end, because basically we use quite a lot the 345 gigahertz, which calibration is only known at 13%. And finally, we include the transfer function error. So for the transfer function error, we just use the relative amplitude of the transfer function error. So, and since our AZ spectrum is just rho AZ minus our estimated residual amplitude, you can see here that most of what we see comes from the residual. So if you put this freeform on that, on the same chart I show you, same plot I show at the beginning of my talk, there is this three new points at a large angular scale, which give a combined limit of about 245 micro k square at 2 sigma level. So this is a little bit higher than the value of SDA, and probably the value that Quad would give. But it's at an area which is not very easy to constrain, because you have a CMB which is several order of magnitude higher than the level of the existing node.
I have one question. So what is the meaning of this instrumental noise wall after CMB?
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're using cross-power spectra, so there's no noise bias in there. But
principle. But there's a little problem is that in boomerang data, there is correlation between the noise of different detectors. So we can remove the diagonal element of the noise correlation matrix, but we cannot remove the other one. We basically that's this guy is there.
Okay.
What's that correlation due to? Is that an atmosphere or what?
Some of the detectors share the same horn, like the 245 and 345, they share the same horn. It could be also atmosphere. That's true. I don't really know. That's true. There also could be some electronic coupling. I'm not really an expert in boomerang data set. I just know that the amplitude is around like 5%. It depends between which detector and which detector. But at high frequency, I think it can be around 5%. So it's not completely negligible. So from that data point, the next step was to try to infer some constraint on SigmaHit. So we did not do anything fancy here. We did maybe the stupid thing according to some of the talk this week, which is just to use, we just assume that Komatsu-Sajak was right, in terms of predicting the SD power spectrum. And we just use that power spectrum to infer the amplitude, the value of sigma 8. And using Cosmo-MC, we found this likelihood distribution, which gives basically upper limit on sigma 8 at 0.96 at 95% confidence.
This is with all data.
Yeah, that's with all data. Because as you can see, so that's Comet Suedal rescale with 0.96 sigma 8. As you can see here, I mean, the problem of putting constraint at very large scale is that most of the model predict much less power on very large scale than very small scale. So
if you were to just use the boomerang data,
let me think. I think that should be around 1.1 or 1.05. Yeah, 1.1 at 2 sigma, probably.
Because it's 200 microcal.
Yeah, it's 244. And in that range, the spectrum is around, if you use sigma 8 equals 0.8, it's around 20.
Right.
Around the middle here. So basically, we have 10 times and
okay.
A roof estimate. And
1.3 maybe.
I don't think 1.3.
But if you use the hypersimulation, then your estimate, your upper limit is actually higher, right?
Are we sure? Well, the thing is that I don't know if you can use this point in that scale because I mean, there's a limited, the size of this simulation is limited, so maybe there's not as much power as it should be here. Well, maybe not here, but.
What was the box size?
The box size was 300 h minus 1 megaparsec, and the simulation produced was 10 degrees, 10 by 10 degrees.
Sorry?
How many megaparsecs?
300 by 300.
How many degrees is that? How many
that?
So that's 10 degrees?
I think so. I mean, I think we were used up to redshift 2. So I guess you have to look at what the redshift 2 size. So finally, yeah, we learned that. We put a limit on the SE emission of around 250 microk², between 250 and 1200. The major uncertainty that we had comes from the fact that we don't really know how much far infrared background, basically dusty galaxy, there is in this field. And I think that's a common problem for all the SE power spectrum measurements. And the other problem was the detector at 345 GHz has a higher noise. And basically, that at the same time, it limits how much we can measure the far infrared background level. And also, it limits how well we can use the 345 GHz to do internal linear combination cleaning of the data. So finally, I want to add that maybe plants should be able to do better because they have more frequency and they have better sensitivity. So they can do this type of things. Much better, and should have a much, much better constraint on the AZ power spectrum at large scale. That's all.
I think I'm missing something here. So why did you have to use 345? Do you have in the first place? I mean, if it's noisy and if far infrared background is a limiting factor, you can just throw it away and just try to do this thing with two channels.
Because the thing is that you still, I mean, as other people showed before, you still expect to see some infrared sources at 150 and 250 gigahertz. Probably not as much in the first beam that we have, but probably substantially in the second and third beam. Even in our case,
so for example, if you have some number, yeah.
Even
right.
For us, I mean, we still have a 58 microgate, and that's after we use the 350 gigahertz to remove some of that. So everything also is
well, now. In other words, are these numbers actually reasonable? That's my question. Are you actually being overly generous? For example,
in terms of estimating how much residual we have,
yeah.
I mean, that this is. too big, and basically you
these things are all degenerate, right? So I wonder.
In a way, well, it's true that you know when you do this this coupling, you couple all the emission and basically.
For example,
mm-hmm.
what if you know, you just ignore fine front background, you ignore radio sources, subtract FDS from map, you know, using template fitting, and just fit for CNV and SZ. Well, what do you get? I mean, that's like the opposite of being overly conservative, I think. I'm just curious, you know, whether you're just simply being overly too conservative.
Well, I have to say that we're probably very conservative in that approach. And you could take more risk in terms of what you could do. But we didn't do the game of just staying 150, 250, subtracting out, and then I guess you will have to fit for the dust, a bit of dust, and some infrared sources. That would be something, yeah, that you could do. But our first idea was, we were thinking first that we would be able to, we thought first that you would have two significant sources at each L-band. We thought that basically you will have dust, galactic dust dominating here, and extra galactic dust dominating here, and CMB across the board. So we thought that free frequency, we should be able to remove everything.
If we have equal noise level in all channels, you don't.
Yeah, but we thought still, you know, because there's still a conversion factor. Since you have less, 145 has less of this, dust emission, the coefficient factor in front of the 245 or 345 can be smaller. So therefore, even if at higher noise level, you don't need as much signal to noise in that channel. So it's more historical reason that we use the three channel instead of using the two channel. But you could try to do. I mean, if you do that, that means that you basically know in advance that we won't be able to remove everything. But so it's the same thing. I mean, it's a bit better than just using one frequency and trying to fit a model on it. But you suppose right away that you won't be able to remove everything. We should try to. But
I also consider that it's very dangerous to say that nothing on these two channels are important. Because when you are working with infrared sources, then the contribution is increasing its frequency, you know, the spectrum. And at some moment, you begin to completely contradict fire result. And when we were working with correlated signal from the star-forming galaxies at high redshifts, main concern was the fire result, because just what SCUBA is observing, it's already very close to the upper limit of fires. And because we believe fires, it's great experiment, and also there was Canadian experiment, which gave similar spectrum. You know, the rocket flight of Halpern and... Dash. This was a great experiment, very small, but which gave practically very close results. And then you are really dependent on the amount of invisible weak sources which are contributing to the background. And any model immediately makes this contradiction. And that is a little better, because 345 is already in the Wien region, and you are not growing. You understand? To the lower, to the higher frequencies. But infrared galaxies are killing galaxies.
Yeah, but I'm curious, because I don't have much sense of what the value should be in this column. But for example, if you extrapolate to N of 1,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's L squared. Yeah, that's right. So if that's L squared CL.
Yeah.
So you multiply this by a factor of 100, which will give you 4,000 at N of 1,000. Or 2,000.
Which one?
If I take FIRV value, 44, right, there.
Yeah, 44,
right?
Yeah.
Then I extrapolate to like 3,000 something. I multiply it by a factor of 100, right? And that's 4,000. Is that what we see in...
If you want 3,000, yeah, you need to be like 100, yeah.
Yeah, then that seems too large to me. And just... aren't they just too large?
Well, I mean, this also kind of... part of this thing comes also from the 350 GHz channel. So, besides, it's also in RG, RG units. So you have to divide by each frequency by a factor, which, for instance, for the 150 is 0.5. And if you divide by 0.5 squared, that's a factor of 4, really. So you will increase, you know, basically you say 4,000, but then if you take into account that factor, then it's only 1,000. Because, well, it's still maybe
it's time, but yeah, I'm curious.
So I have a question. So what's the difference between far infrared background and galactic dust? Sounds like a stupid question, but
okay.
Point, yes.
That's come from emission from our own galaxy, and that's extragalactic extragalactic dust emission. So the dust from.
But is it still dust? That's dust, it's water dust.
Yeah, but except that.
Since from dust at different temperature.
Also. Different temperature and different pressure.
Our dust is much colder.
So.
Well,
significantly colder.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, like these SFT maps that are made, they weren't made for our galaxy, they are based on IRS, which sees our galaxy and other galaxies.
I thought it was subtracting, though, when they did the.
I
mean, that's what they told me, that they tried to subtract with, I think, HFR or something like that. But I'm not really convinced myself that it's completely separated, but I think it's supposed to be.
Well, I mean, there is
somewhere.
Galactic contamination.
No, there is also Lagasse and Fouché paper where they took the data of FIRES minus the galactic model and CMB. And they're giving upper limit. FIRES in the original paper of FIRES is there, but also then this French group also analyzed what is
so you're
the
saying
far infrared background.
So main difference is that there's much hotter dust.
Yes, it's hotter dust.
Okay.
Because there is, these are star-forming objects, and in star-forming objects, gas is much stronger heated. And therefore, spectrum is different than in our. And our dust is measured very well by fire. Just you know, there are right papers, what with lines, with everything which is from fires. And we know that our dust, except some compact regions like Orion or central part of the galaxy, dust is much, much colder. It is 7 degrees, right? Below 10 degrees. And it is. We know from the maximum, from the spectrum of dusty sources, extragalactic sources, the temperature of that dust is of the order of 30, 40 Kelvin. And it's a completely different picture.
So do we have a map for the extragalactic dust?
For the extragalactic dust, we do not have map of the same quality. We know the integral flux. Because people assume that FIRES had very big field of view. It's just integrated.
I see. Okay.
All right. So if you do this for the CMB component, do you get the same answer that Boomerang does, like to machine precision? I mean, how close do you come to the Boomerang answer for the CMB after the band power estimate?
Oh, you mean if you try to remove all the Boomerang except the CMB?
Yeah, and then calculate the spectrum this way and subtract out the results.
I have to say that we didn't do that. Because basically, when we look at the spectrum of our, I mean, 145, 245, 345, we get already a quite nice measurement of the CMB spectrum. So, I accept maybe for 345, well, there's a bit of dust that you need to subtract. But we did not try to do, let's just find the CMB. Because already at 145, 245, and even at 345, we can see the CMB spectrum quite clearly. So
the residuals in the CMB power spectrum might give us a sense. I have another check on the level of error that might be kicking around in the process.
Might be, but I mean, we need to do that. So.
Did you fit with just everything but Boomerang?
A fit with everything
else but Boomerang?
Oh, was it for CMA, you mean?
Yeah, for CMA.
No, we didn't do. I asked for it, but anyways, you can see that you have 200 micro K square, I would say. And
well, just because it's fixed, it looks like it's being driven by the CMA.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe you can see here that you know, it's 234, so it's 117.
at one sigma. This is all one sigma error.
Right.
So basically, you have a boat, I mean, a bit even bigger than SDA. And here, if you use Komatsu template, Komatsu is like a template as a SDA spectrum, you will get at least twice more in terms of amplitude. So you know that the limit is at least a factor of two better. So let's go like a square. I mean, maybe we had like 20-30% to the constraint, but.
All right. Thank you very much. I think I want to speak with